stand. Our first case is 21-1495, Tris Pharma v. Activist Laboratories. Mr. Burgess, please proceed when you're ready.
Good morning, Your Honor. Brian Burgess for Activist. This appeal concerns patents on a formulation for methylphenidate, or MPH, which has been used to treat ADHD since the 1950s. Tris touts its product, Quilvin, as the first extended-release liquid formulation of MPH, but Tris did not appeal the trial court's findings that its liquid formulation claims are obvious over Tris's own prior art patent application, Meta, which discloses the drug delivery platform that Tris uses to make Quilvin. What remains, then, are claims that combine certain clinical properties that had already been achieved in the prior art with certain pharmacokinetic details that happen to result from Tris's use of the Meta platform. On remand from this court, the newly assigned district court judge held that these remaining claims were non-obvious, but the court's conclusion rested on several legal errors, including two of particular importance. First, the court exceeded the scope of its mandate by reversing, on a cold record, findings that had been made by the trial judge and that were upheld by this court on appeal. Second, the court conflated obviousness with anticipation by repeatedly discounting references on the ground that they didn't perfectly overlap with the asserted claim limitations, rather than considering the prior art as a whole.
Just starting with your first point, as I recall what this court did the last time around this case was on appeal, this court's opinion comprehensively stripped that district court opinion down to basically nothing and to send the case back for a do-over. And ended up vacating that district court opinion completely. So for purposes of a productive oral argument this morning, I think it would be helpful if you just understood our court's opinion in that manner and considered this case as the district court on remand doing a do-over on the 103 question.
I'm happy to do that, Judge Chan, if I could please have just a chance to push back on that premise first, and then I'm happy to move on. I mean, we agree that the court recognized that Judge Sleet had missed several issues and remanded for supplemental findings, including on the ultimate questions of whether these claims were obvious, and we're not disputing any of that. We do think that within the opinion, and for example, at page 657 in the appendix, at the end of the opinion, the court notes that it considered all the parties' remaining arguments and found that they were unpersuasive. The court also specifically addressed the Skaczynski reference, and that was not an issue in which the court found that Judge Sleet had been ambiguous in his findings or hadn't made a clear finding. The court said it was important that he had found.
So you think that kind of general tagline that we throw in at a lot of our opinions limited the scope of the remand, even though it didn't specifically affirm parts of the prior decision?
I do. I think the other side doesn't have any account for what that means. The court could have done a straight vacature, but it didn't. It addressed some of the arguments. It found some unpersuasive. For example,
I mean, isn't it just we've looked at these other arguments and we don't find any of them sufficient to alter the judgment we're giving you, which is go do a do-over on the obviousness question?
I don't think that's right. I mean, for example, the court specifically addressed Tris's lead argument about cyclobenzaprine and whether that dictated an obviousness conclusion. And in footnote 3 of the opinion, the court said no.
Well,
we find it distinguishable. So it couldn't have been that Judge Conley on remand could have said, well, actually, cyclobenzaprine dictates the obvious result.
How are we to determine from reading the opinion, and I obviously wasn't on the prior panel, what that general tagline is meant to, at least in your view, limit the scope of the remand? Do I have to go back and look at the briefs and parse them and determine, well, they raised this argument and that line rejected it, you know, brief by brief? If we wanted a limited remand, we say remand for X purpose. I mean, frankly, I shouldn't ask you these questions because I think you're wasting your time. I'd suggest you get on to the rest of your argument, too, as my colleague did.
Understood. So I'll turn to, I mean, I think in terms of what we think it was preserved, is the importance of Skaczynski, and I'm happy to take that on just as an initial matter, whether the district judge was free to disregard and discount Skaczynski as on the ground that it was prophetic. A prophetic reference can still teach motivations, can still teach reasonable likelihood of success. As a prior art As a prior patent application, Skaczynski is presumed enabled. There was testimony that was found credible but also unrebutted from our expert, Dr. Strong, that a skilled artisan would be able to look at Skaczynski and translate its profile into a commercial product. The other side didn't present a pharmacokinetic expert, so that testimony, which is at pages 382 and 383 of the appendix, stood unrebutted, and we think it's critical. So whether you get to Skaczynski can't be discounted because on the basis of being prophetic based on the scope of this court's mandate, or if you just get it as an initial matter that there's no basis for simply discounting a reference as prophetic when there is unrebutted expert testimony that a skilled artisan would credit it. It doesn't matter which path you get there. We do think Skaczynski is a critical reference because based on the findings of Judge Conley, the remand findings, Skaczynski almost perfectly overlaps with the relevant asserted claims.
Where in your briefing below did you make the case that, okay, here's the Skaczynski reference. It teaches, well, you were strongly pushing the idea that it teaches everything in the claim. And so obviously the district court pushed back on that and said, no, it does not. But for 103 purposes, where did you argue, here's Skaczynski, it's my primary reference. There's some little gaps here and there, but here's the motivation to make those minor modifications, and here's why there'd be a reasonable expectation of success, that when you make those modifications, you will still preserve the single peak profile.
So the places where I think we make that argument most specifically are at 733 through 735 of the appendix. And you're right, Judge Chen. Our primary submission on remand was that we thought Skaczynski...
So where in 733 to 735 did you tell that story?
And which volume of the appendix is this? And just out of curiosity, why do we have 8 volumes of an appendix, each of which appear to be 3 pages long?
Sure. The way it proceeded is that because this was, we had a record on from the first appeal, the parties designated the same record that had been used before, initially in the briefing, and then added on the additional materials that were supplemented on remand. I apologize to the court if it resulted in an unwieldy appendix, but that is how we proceeded.
Don't do it again.
I apologize.
Okay, so what volume do you want me to look at? Since there are 8 of them.
I don't have the volume number off.
It's volume 7.
Volume 7, I'm told.
And what page did you want?
Let's see.
6 something?
No, I believe it was that. 733 is an example where it picks up. And if you can see, there's the little C where this argument is initially made. And as Judge Ten noted, it was our primary submission on remand that Skaczynski overlapped entirely with the claim limitations because we were arguing that it taught 45-minute onset.
Right, and that was objected, so now we're moving on to 103.
Right, and so we then said, okay, the judge agreed with us as to many aspects of Skaczynski, that it taught 12 hours, that it taught single peak, that it taught a Tmax within the claimed range, but that he found that it taught within 60 minutes onset rather than 45. Here we argue, even if Skaczynski and Concerta, which we also argued overlapped and the judge disagreed, disclosed all the limitations, the remaining 15-minute gap is not significant because you have the teaching from Meta in the prior art that it would be a routine.
But why would one be motivated in the first place to alter the 1 hour early onset to a 45-minute early onset? I understand you're saying it's only 15 minutes. Another way to say it is it's a 25% reduction. And in the larger sense, there still has to be a reason for why someone would do that. And at the same time, why would there be a motivation to maintain and preserve the single peak profile? As I understand it, both experts testified that it doesn't matter. The single peak does not matter. They don't care. If the single peak ultimately turned into a bimodal profile, that would be fine by them. So that's the question that I have when I look at your Skaczynski argument, which is, number one, where did you argue that here's the reason why people of skill in the art would want to get to a 45-minute early onset? In addition, here is why we are quite confident that the APOSA would also want to still have a single peak profile in that circumstance, and it would be reasonable to get and preserve a single peak profile.
Sure. So I understand that to be a two-part question, I think, in terms of first why you would get to 45 and why you would also maintain a single peak.
And then where was that argued here?
Sure. I mean, as to where to 45, that's stipulated. In page 570 of the original trial court opinion, it runs through the party stipulations, and it is stipulated that there would be a motivation to develop a product that has 45 minutes, liquid, 12 hours. So that part was stipulated that there would be a motivation to achieve that. So the remaining question is whether there would be also a motivation to achieve these characteristics using a single peak. And we agree with Your Honor that the testimony from both sides' experts, from Tris's inventor, was that artisans are essentially indifferent to this question because it doesn't have therapeutic effect. The argument we're making there, I think, is primarily legal, that when you have indifference between two known suitable results that are achieved, that have been used in the prior art, the choice between them is not something that determines novelty.
That is true in the broadest sense, but that principle rests on a premise that both of those alternatives are in fact attainable, that are realistic. And here, it's not so clear that you can get a single peak profile any which way you mix all the ingredients. In fact, it seems pretty rare that you ever get a single peak profile based on the different examples that were actually produced in the prior art. So that's the concern, is you've got an uphill climb to make on explaining why it would be, there'd be confidence that when you keep stretching the early onset time further and further away from the 12-hour duration length, that you would still be able to maintain and preserve a single peak profile in that circumstance. And that's what I'm looking for here.
Sure. I mean, on stretching away from the 12, the relevant claim limitation is about 12 hours, so it actually goes down to 10.8. And Skaczynski discloses a range that goes from 11 to 12. And so going from 60 to 45, when you combine it with the meta reference, which discloses that it was a matter of routine optimization to change the mixture of immediate release and sustained release components to get the profile
you want.
I
believe the district court found that meta was a little bit too generic in its description of, yes, there's lots of tools in the toolkit to mix things in different ways, but it doesn't comment in any way that here's how you make sure you're always going to have a single peak profile. And I guess that was the concern. How do you maintain that? And the evidence wasn't, in the district court's view, clean and clear enough on that score.
Sure, I understand that from Meta. Dr. Morton at trial testified that a skilled artisan with background knowledge in the art reading Meta would believe that you could customize it, use Meta to customize it while maintaining a single peak profile. And Judge Sleet did find that testimony credible. Judge Connolly purported not to disturb his credibility finding, but it seems like he nonetheless found the opposite as to that issue. So I think the important point is that we're not relying only on Meta or only on Skaczynski. And we think it was a basic error Judge Connolly made when he looked at those references only in isolation rather than considering what they teach together. And as to you suggested that there had not been many examples in the prior art of a single peak. And there were some. Daytrana is an example. And there's only one example in the prior art, Focalin XR, that achieved these clinical properties. And the fact that there's one example that is bimodal, we don't think under this court's case law is sufficient for a teaching away. Now, what the other side really relied on at trial for arguing that there was a teaching away, that you would think a single peak wouldn't work, is the acute tolerance theory that Dr. McGough testified at length. But Judge Connolly specifically declined to rely on acute tolerance. He wouldn't make a finding on that. So absent a finding on that, you have examples in the prior art that are single peak. You have Skaczynski indisputably using a single peak profile to achieve these clinical properties. You have testimony that a skilled artisan would have been inclined to look to Skaczynski because it's seeking to achieve the same basic properties as the patents in suit. It's trying to achieve an effective once-daily medication that has rapid onset and extended duration. You have undisputed expert testimony from our pharmacokineticists that you would be able to use a well-established technique to translate Skaczynski's profile to a commercial product. So given all that, we think that there's ample basis for motivation and reasonable expectation. And in the absence of anything to support a finding of teaching away, which Judge Conley conspicuously declined to do, he said, you know, having not witnessed the expert testimony, I lack the confidence to make a finding on that. But nonetheless, he then relied on the same expert testimony when suggesting that there was a teaching away. And that is internally contradictory and we think cannot be sustained.
Counsel, you've used all of your time, so let's hear from Mr. Taylor, please.
Good morning, Errol Taylor for Tris. I want to dive, I guess, right into the prior art and Skaczynski. That reference, the Skaczynski reference, is something that you know they activist relies heavily on, as we discussed in his argument. But what is clear about Skaczynski is that it omits certain important claim limitations that activist seems to gloss over. Skaczynski does not disclose a liquid product. The product that is at issue in this case is the first liquid formulation of methylphenidate. It is the first and only liquid formulation that results in a 45-minute onset of activity and 12 hours worth of therapeutic effect that allows these children to have this product effective during the day. Simply just not okay to read out limitations in the claims.
Well, do you disagree that there would have been a motivation to make Skaczynski into a liquid formulation because it was desirable to have a liquid formulation at the time?
There's absolutely nothing in the record that suggests the motivation to start with Skaczynski and to make it into a liquid formulation. It's just not there.
I thought part of your secondary consideration story is that you know people at the time were really interested in having a liquid version of this drug.
Absolutely.
There was a motivation. There was a desire. There was an interest to have this as a liquid formulation.
Well, that's two different things. There was a motivation, clearly, and a long-felt need for a liquid, long-acting methylphenidate formulation that had a very early onset of activity and 12-hour efficacy. There is no evidence that a person of ordinary skill would have looked to Skaczynski to satisfy and solve that problem. And that is where the key hole is in the activist evidence. Skaczynski does not disclose a liquid product. Now, there's been some discussion about the fact that it's a prophetic reference. And what does that mean to a person of ordinary skill as they review that document? Now, clearly I agree that a publication should be reviewed and understood for what it discloses, but it also should be looked at for what it doesn't disclose. Now, this
apart from the liquid formulation, what doesn't Skaczynski disclose?
It does not disclose 45 minutes onset of activity.
It only has an hour, is that
it
right?
It has an hour. Now, again, this is where the fact that it's a prophetic paper patent is relevant. The authors of Skaczynski could have put any time period in their disclosure, if they thought that what they were disclosing would have gotten to that time period.
But
they chose
about,
to put in 1 hour.
What about opposing counsel's pointing to page, I think it's 570 in the record, paragraph 97, where there's a fact finding that as of July 2010, APOSA would have been motivated to make a liquid with an early onset, for example, 45 minutes. But is that not a fact finding? Or
sure, that's a fact finding, but that's like saying scientists today are motivated to find a cure for cancer. The motivation to find the answer to this long-standing problem is frankly one of the reasons why the court found that there were secondary indicia of unobviousness. Methylphenidate had been known for almost 50 years at the time of the invention. There had been a long-felt need for a liquid product that had very early onset of action and 12-hour efficacy. That's the motivation, but for 50 years, no one came up with an answer to that problem until the scientists at Trist did it. So you can't use the motivation.
And I know this isn't part of the case, but you've talked about all these different criteria, 45 minutes, 12 hours, one peak, and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. None of this case explains how any of this was done. I mean, it's not in the claims that are at issue here, but it seems to me that if there was a problem, it was the scientists couldn't come up with the specific proportions. But that's not what these claims are based upon. They just claim these criteria, and we don't even know, you know, how it's done from the claims we're looking at.
Well, the patent clearly describes in its body how it's done, and there was testimony, extensive testimony at trial.
I know, about I'm just the confused, like, process. Why aren't the claims directed to, here's the composition that will give you these results, rather than just the results themselves?
The claims include both. We're focusing on
Are the ones that actually claim the compositions the ones that are no longer valid?
Excuse me?
Are the ones that claim the composition the ones that are no longer valid under the other prior art?
The claims that were limited to the composition were the ones that we chose not to focus on in the appeal, and the district court found to be obvious.
So you can't get the claims to the composition, but you can get the claims to the effect of the composition.
Well, I wouldn't call it the effect of the composition. It is the combination of the pharmacokinetic properties and the pharmacodynamic clinical effects of the composition that led to this important therapy. Now, that's what those claims are directed to, and that was not presaged or predicted by the prior art.
I'm a little confused by your understanding of our motivation to combine law. Methylphenidate existed for a long period of time prior to this, and there's a fact finding that you haven't appealed and possibly even stipulated to, I don't know, but a fact finding that APOSA would have been motivated to make a liquid ER methylphenidate formulation with an onset of 45 minutes in 2010. So I guess what is it that you think the law of motivation to combine requires that isn't satisfied by that combination?
Yeah. That says nothing about combining one reference, Skizinski, to solve that problem when Skizinski doesn't disclose the liquid, doesn't disclose early onset, and its disclosure
if there existed a motivation to turn methylphenidate into a liquid, wouldn't that motivation, which has been found as a matter of fact, exist with regard to every reference that discloses methylphenidate?
Well, that's one way to look at it, but Skizinski wasn't the only methylphenidate formulation. What the court found is that look at the actual drugs that were on the market that were methylphenidate long-acting formulation. None of them came close to solving the product this way. Focalin, product...
But that goes to a reasonable expectation of success, or possibly it goes to secondary considerations, but I don't see how that gets pigeonholed under motivation to combine. It seems to me there is a motivation to take any methylphenidate product or reference and make it liquid. It seems like there is a motivation to take any methylphenidate product or reference and have it have early onset action, because that's what these fact findings that aren't appealed say was present at the time. So I don't understand how you believe we should find there was no motivation to modify Skizinski in order to make it liquid or in order to have it onset in 45 minutes.
Well, there was no evidence put on about that motivation. Now, the court may assume, you may decide to assume that the motivation.
I'm not assuming anything. There's a fact finding.
But that's
right? Was this stipulated to?
I believe it was, Your Honor. But
so there's
a stipulation
that in 2010, people of skill in the art were looking at methylphenidate and trying to reduce its onset to 45 minutes.
And trying to develop a liquid formulation.
Right.
Maybe. And no one was successful in doing
just
that.
Just so I understand, if I can understand this colloquy, perhaps what you're trying to say is there generically, broadly speaking, there might have been an interest, a motive, a motivation to try to get an early onset as early as 45 minutes and have a liquid formulation of this drug. But activists did not present a case, a Szczesinski-centric case for why you would convert Szczesinski into a liquid formulation, why you would take Szczesinski and make a 45-minute and still be able to have all the other claim elements that are recited in the claim.
Right. And getting to your point, Judge Moore, is where is the evidence that there was a reasonable expectation of success in doing that?
Well, but that I understand. That's where I think your argument fits. Where, for me, I'm struggling is to fit it within the rubric of motivation to combine, which I think is a different analysis than reasonable expectation of success.
I would posit that it's both. Your Honor,
yes, I understand you'd like to win on all issues. Yes, I get that.
Can you focus on reasonable expectation of success then?
Sure. One of the things that counsel alluded to was that there the holes in the Szczesinski references, assuming that someone even would even start to that, include that it's a liquid and that it doesn't meet the 45-minute onset. And they said, look at Meta, which is this general reference that only discloses, you know, what is clearly known in the art that you could adjust the number of fast-acting and delayed-release components in a formulation. Meta says nothing about specifically changing the onset of activity in a product, in a liquid product, in a manner that would do two things. One, reduce the onset time for onset of activity and maintain the clinical profile, the PK profile, such that it maintains a single mean peak. Meta says nothing about that. And, you know, the testimony on this Meta issue is by their expert Morton, and I would ask the court to really look at that testimony. It's at 325 and 326 in the record, and also 970 and 971. That's the testimony that activists relies on to fill the gap, the gaping hole in Szczesinski.
So if there is this long-felt need for a liquid formula with these characteristics, mm-hmm. how did you achieve it when everybody else was looking for it?
Well,
specific, you know, characteristics did you find that nobody else could get to?
Well, it was a bit of serendipity. The scientists at Trist were working on this product for quite so many years, trying to figure out how to develop a liquid product that met these characteristics. And they found this product, and they realized that, you know, to make an effective product, you had this particular profile, this single mean peak profile that, you know, people...
Right, but I'm asking you, I don't really want to talk about the profile, which is all you want to talk about. How did you come up with the composition that gets to that profile? How is that different from what everybody else was doing, the actual composition?
The actual composition.
The actual composition is what gets you the profile, right?
But that's part of it.
Well, what else gets you the profile?
The components, the pellets that are involved in the methylphenidate, what the combination is of those to come to the specific PK profile.
What do you mean when you say the combination of pellets? What are you talking about?
The formulation includes a number of different pellets, methylphenidate resin pellets in the formulation. And these pellets have varying amounts of coatings on them. And how you mix those pellets
are there
in the formulation
kinds of pellets?
dictate
are there
how
different
the,
kinds of pellets?
Excuse me?
Are there different kinds of pellets?
Yeah, there's at least two different kinds of pellets in the
formulation. Is it the slow acting and the fast acting?
That's one way to characterize it. They're methylphenidate resins that are coated.
I mean, I would have expected in a case like this where everything seems, I mean, this has been around forever, that what we were arguing about for expectation of success is the particular percentages you have, the particular coatings, make them release faster or lower, that's what gave you the expectation of success. Right. And I get it. Our law lets you just claim like properties without actually also relying on the underlying characteristics.
Yeah.
But it seems like if you had a expectation of success argument, it would be, well, nobody ever thought of mixing them this way and using this particular coating or this excipient or things like that. But there's none of that in this case, is there?
Yeah. Well, it's our view that it's actually both, right? I mean, you wouldn't have this invention without both parts of it. The formulation side of it that enable a person to, you know, formulate methylphenidate in this manner. But also the pharmacokinetic and pharmacodynamic side that announced.
Your time is up, but I just wanted to ask this one last question. I understand why it's desirable to get an early onset. I understand why it's desirable to have an all-day duration effect. I understand why it's desirable to have a liquid formulation. What's the purpose of a single peak? All the experts say it doesn't matter. Single peak, bimodal, it doesn't matter. Why is that limitation in the claim? What is the purpose of that limitation in the claim?
Well, it actually does matter.
Because why?
Because with these products, with this product, to ensure that you get the pharmacodynamics, the clinical effect, the research has shown that this PK curve is important. And that's acknowledged by the FDA. The FDA, it's in our record, the FDA included a more stringent pharmacokinetic requirement for generics to get an equivalent product to Quillivon, the product of the invention, so that it matched this PK curve. That's one of the things that's so unobvious about this invention, that with regard to this product. Excuse me?
A record site.
I do. It's 261.
What volume is that?
And
of your 85 volume JA?
Which is the testimony of...
What volume is it?
I'm not sure what volume that is. And also the FDA guidance on this specific issue is at 1466 and 67. To 61 is the testimony of Triss's Mr. Caden.
Are you good, Judge Chen?
I'm done.
All righty. Thank you, Mr. Taylor.
Thank you.
Mr. Burgess, only because we went over with Mr. Taylor, I'll restore 2 minutes and 48 seconds of rebuttal time. But you, since you used it all, you may have been without any had that not happened. So just be wary in the future.
Sure. Thank you, Your Honor. So starting with the question of whether there'd be a motivation to translate Skaczynski to a liquid and whether there was testimony about that, there absolutely was. That was Dr. Stoller's testimony in Appendix 283 through 84, which is what Judge Sleet credited. counsel also suggested that there was no evidence that Meta would provide a basis for achieving quicker onset. That's also wrong. Page 966 of the appendix, that's Dr. Morton's testimony explaining how Meta could be customized by changing the ratio of immediate release to sustained release.
Yes, but these are fact questions. The fact that there exists in the record some evidence that you can point to the contrary doesn't get you over the fact.
I agree with that, but on that issue, Judge Connolly didn't make a contrary finding about what he. Our point there is he did not consider Meta and Skaczynski together. He said Skaczynski, well, it doesn't disclose 45 minutes, therefore it doesn't. There's not a motivation and there's not a reasonable expectation of success, and Meta alone doesn't show you could achieve all these characteristics. We're not arguing otherwise. We're saying when you combine these references, which is what Judge Connolly did not do. To Judge Hughes's question about, you know, how was it that Tris was able to achieve this? Isn't this a product of the combination of the release components? The answer to that is yes, and we think to the extent that there was an advance that Tris accomplished, it was Meta. It was the prior art patent application, which then issued as a patent, which it claims in the Orange Book for Quillivant. But they didn't assert that patent against us because we don't infringe it. There's a different polymer coating that we use versus that was claimed in the patent, so they couldn't assert that against us. But to the extent there was an advance about how to develop a liquid formulation, about how to figure out the proper ratios to achieve these characteristics, that comes from that patent, that patent application that issued as a patent that they don't assert against us. The claims that are being asserted here are just efforts to optimize Meta and to make obvious modifications to achieve these particular characteristics that had been achieved in the art and that there's stipulation that a skilled artisan would be motivated to achieve. If the court has no further questions, we urge you to reverse.
Okay, thank you. I thank both counsel. This case is taken under submission.